You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Today on The Grave Talks, the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital. Originally constructed in the 1950s, the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital in Pittsburgh, Tennessee, was a blessing and a necessity for the rural community in Tennessee. During its life as a care facility, life and care was interesting, to say the least. Malpractice, possibly murder, and more were all a part of the history of care at the hospital. Death during procedures was unfortunately a common reality at the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital. After a close, the dark history of the hospital gets even darker. A man released from prison after serving time for a horrid crime ends up calling the abandoned hospital home. The man begins to conjure demons. Demons that seem to have latched onto those who have investigated the property, possibly including paranormal investigator Tim Nealon. Tim joins us today to discuss the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital.
Yeah, well, Old South Pittsburgh Hospital, it actually came into existence in the late 50s, 1958. And it was needed because South Pittsburgh, Tennessee, it's a very small town, it's a farming community. And at the time, the closest hospital was well over an hour away. So they needed something local to be able to service the community. And it actually started out as not just a hospital, because being such a small town, they didn't really have room for doctor's offices. There weren't a lot of office buildings and things like that. So it was funny because you would go into the hospital, and of course you have the hospital, the emergency room, the operating rooms, all that stuff that you'd always think of. But on the other side of the hospital was actually the clinic. So that's where the kids would come in and, you know, hey, my little Jimmy has a sore throat. What do I need to give him? That kind of stuff. At one point, there was even a dentist's office in there. So it was a little bit of everything involving, you know, the medical needs of the community. But it was never a huge hospital. And then it closed. Now I'm getting way ahead of myself. But it ended up closing in 1998 just because of the fact that it wasn't needed anymore. They built a new hospital not too far away, and they shuttered it.
During its lifetime as a hospital, obviously we got a good span of years there, almost, you know, 40, 50 years. What was it like at the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital for the staff, for the patients and such?
Yeah, we'll just call that interesting. Okay. It was interesting during those 40 years for not only the people that worked at the hospital, but the patients that came in as well. You know, being that South Pittsburgh is a very small community, they didn't exactly have a lot of money to work with. So the doctors that they would bring in were more of a generalist type doctor. They didn't have specialists. You weren't going in and seeing a cardiologist. You were going in and seeing a doctor. And the same doctor who might be treating your kid for a sore throat one day might be putting in a pacemaker the next. They didn't have those specialist type doctors that we are accustomed to and spoiled with today. So the type of medical care you would get at Old South Pittsburgh Hospital, and I'm certainly not shitting on anybody, especially the people that are still alive that work there. I'm like, holy shit, why is he, you know, saying all these negative things about us? That's not what I'm doing at all. But we can all face reality and say that the type of medical care, the quality of medical care that you get at Old South Pittsburgh Hospital wasn't exactly stellar, we'll put it that way. Sure. You know, throughout the history of the hospital, there were a number of doctors who were fired. There were a number of doctors who faced malpractice suits. We even had a couple doctors who probably killed their wife. I don't think it was proven, so I'm certainly not going to go on record naming this guy and saying that he killed his wife, but it's a pretty well accepted fact that this doctor killed his wife. So it was really interesting, you know, for the staff there. As far as the patients go, I mean, like I said, it was a crapshoot. You know, there were a number of stories of people going into the hospital for simple procedures. The reason I used that heart, the pacemaker example just a minute ago is because that's one of the more famous stories that somebody went in to get a pacemaker installed, which is a fairly routine procedure, and they ended up dying on the table. You know, people dying during surgery there when they probably shouldn't have been dying was not uncommon, unfortunately. So, you know, throughout all those years, it was, like I said, I don't want to say it was a horrible place. I'm positive they saved a number of people's lives. I'm positive they did a number of great things for the people of their community. But when I say hospital, I don't want people thinking that this place was on par with anything that we would typically think of as a professional hospital today.
It's interesting because we're talking, you know, 80s and 90s, which for those of us who are in our 30s, doesn't seem that long ago. You know, it's like
I've seen a picture of you. Are you sure you're in your 30s?
I am. Yes, I am positive. I'm in my 30s. Yes, mid 30s.
I'm just giving you crap. I'm 38.
So. Okay. I'm 36. So yeah, so we're around the same age. But yeah, right. I mean, it's one of those things where you look back and you go, holy shit, I remember going to the doctor's office or a hospital at that point in time. But then you think back, and this being the building that it is today and the type of care and everything that was being executed not that long ago in the scheme of things, it's kind of scary to think about. Of course, yeah. When you have a facility like that, and you're looking back at it, really, I'm sure, you know, there was obviously, as you said, malpractice and things of that nature going on. But would you say or agree that a lot of it was probably just, you know, because of the rural premises of it and lack of probably a budget to bring in this type of doctors that would be needed for a paycheck that they would be wanting? You had people who were basically trying to do their best with what they had. Is that a lot of what was going on?
Yeah, that sums it up very well. I mean, you know, South Pittsburgh Hospital would have had a really hard time trying to recruit somebody from Johns Hopkins, for example.
Sure.
I mean, they're not graduating from there and say, man, I really want to move to South Pittsburgh, Tennessee. I've really been hearing a lot about this place. Mm-hmm. I think that's where I want to go. That happened never. So the people that were working there, you know, weren't exactly, you know, top caliber people. Mm-hmm. Because of the fact that, you know, that the top quality people are going to go to the bigger cities where the bigger paychecks are.
Sure.
And, you know, it wasn't always that, you know, they hired dumb people. I don't want to suggest that either. But yeah, when we're talking about budget, these doctors were extremely overworked.
Yeah.
I mean, they couldn't afford to have doctors there for every need that they had. So, you know, like I mentioned a few minutes ago, we had doctors that were, you know, in that clinic diagnosing kids with sore throats and the common cold one day, and they're performing surgery the next day.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the same time, I sit here and talk about the malpractice and all the other bad things that happened there. You know, there is a small part of me that thinks, well, like, what do you expect?
Yeah.
You know, you were working these guys to death, sometimes literally.
Sure.
What did you think was going to happen? Yeah,
when you have things like that, I mean, with any field, there's always essentially training grounds. There's grounds where you go after things didn't go good in the bigger leagues, and you kind of go back to. And unfortunately, in medical, that exists too. It's something we don't really want to think about if we happen to be at one of those facilities. But it's just kind of a reality of the way, you know, things had been and the way things are in some communities still to this day. When we're talking about some of those things that went on there, and I obviously don't want to name any names or anything of that nature.
Right. But, yeah. We're not trying to get sued.
Yeah. But when you have things like that, where the you alluded to earlier of the possibility that someone murdered their wife. Without naming any names or getting too specific, can you give us some of the story of that?
It's never been a long story, to be honest. It's always been a short story. But it was pretty well known that it within this community that the doctor had murdered his wife at home. And he was the prime suspect. And he was never charged. He never went to prison. But once again, everybody within the community, because I mean, it's literally a community of a couple hundred people. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not even talking a town of, you know, at the time it wasn't even a town of 1,000 people. It was pretty well known that, yeah, he killed his wife. He was talking about doing it and she turns up dead one day while he was on his lunch break. You know,
okay.
It wasn't hard to put that puzzle together.
I was wondering if it happened like at the hospital of some sort, where it's like, come on in for your checkup, and then, you know, you get some,
yeah,
you know,
bye, bitch.
this isn't the aspirin I was supposed to be getting.
No, it did take place in their private residence. There was that.
And then was he just continuing to practice as, you know, you're the doctor you go check up with after these allegations are going on in the community or rumors are flying around? Like, hey, let's go check in with him and see how I'm doing this week.
I don't know that they had much of a choice.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I wasn't living in the community mm-hmm. then, so I can't, you know, say with absolute certainty. But mm-hmm. I've talked to people who have lived there their whole lives. I've talked to people who lived there during these time frames. And mm-hmm. I mean, the reality is they didn't have much of a choice. If you wanted to go see a doctor, it was just these handful of guys. Oh. Unless you wanted to travel for hours, which, you know, for these people in a small farming community wasn't mm-hmm. a financial reality. You know, they couldn't just afford to go drive somewhere for 2 hours to see another doctor.
Sure. Is he still around?
I don't know. I think that he's dead.
Okay.
I think he's dead. He's not one of the doctors who were supposedly rumored to haunt the hospital. Okay. I didn't hear that. But
so let's get into that a little bit, the rumors of haunting, because we're mm-hmm. saying this place closed in 98. When it was an active hospital, were there any rumors back then of paranormal activity taking place within the halls of the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital?
Absolutely. Back when, I think it was 2013, when I became heavily involved in the hospital, I actually had this idea that I was going to put a documentary together on the hospital. And even though that never came to fruition, because I have a habit of starting way too many companies and keeping myself way too busy, and that project kind of fell off. We did have time to, and the opportunity to interview a couple nurses who used to work at the hospital and their head maintenance. I don't want to say, he's not a manager, I guess just a janitor, I'm sorry. Just like a head maintenance guy, mm-hmm. whatever that title officially is. And they all had stories of, you know, hauntings at the hospital, you know, being there late at night, or in this hospital's case, in the middle of the day. I mean, that's one of the unique things about Old South Pittsburgh Hospital, is the fact that, you know, people tend to associate hauntings and paranormal activity, you know, with, as an event that happens after the sun goes down. There was no off time for Old South Pittsburgh Hospital while they were working in it or when we were always there. So they would always tell stories about seeing patients, you know, hey, this, I saw this guy in the hallway, but I know he died 2 weeks ago, that kind of thing, or moaning or sounds or doors opening and shutting. You know, the stories I got from the people who worked there, they were all kind of the run-of-the-mill ghost stories. They, you know, that you always hear. Things moving, voices, shadows, sometimes people, that type of stuff. The really interesting haunting started taking place after the hospital officially closed, because when that hospital closed, that wasn't the end of the story. It wasn't just the hospital closed, it was empty for a couple of years and people started hunting ghosts there. There were some very interesting events after it closed that produced some extraordinary paranormal experiences.
When it, in that time window, what were some of those things that stood out?
During which time? For the employees?
Right after it closed, and you said that there were some extraordinary things that began to happen there.
Yeah, I mean, there were things that kind of set the stage for the hauntings that would take place later at Old South Pittsburgh Hospital. You know, for example, in 2000, I think it was 2001, there was a gentleman, and once again, I'm going to try not to use names, mm-hmm. But he bought the hospital, and he bought the hospital with the intention of turning it into a nursing home. Well, that didn't happen. What did happen, though, was that a friend of his son went to jail for molesting his daughter. It was well known. He was found guilty. He went to prison. When he got out of prison, he needed a place to stay, and the family was not comfortable letting them stay at their house. So take one wild guess where they let this guy stay. They let him stay in the abandoned hospital.
Like a dorm?
Yeah, like he lived there for quite a while. Actually, there was a woman who came to manage the hospital, and it was the best friend of her husband. So
okay.
We have the owner, we have the son, and then the son's best friend. That son's best friend is who we're talking about here.
Okay.
And, you know, he lived there for quite a while, and he actually ended up dying in the basement, the bottom floor of the hospital while he was there. And it was always known that he was a real creepy guy. I mean, shit, you molested your daughter. I mean, yeah. You're not a good person. Well, so fast forward just a little bit, and now it's 2012. And in 2012, how I became acquainted with the hospital and so intimately was that my tour company, Ghost City Tours, at that time, we were holding ghost hunting events all over the country. And Old South Pittsburgh Hospital happened to be one of the places that we were having an event at. Well, the day before the event, I get a call from some lady. I don't even know who she is at the time. Hey, Tim, I just want to let you know that the caretakers of the hospital disappeared in the middle of the night with all of our money, all of everything, and we're canceling your event tomorrow. Well, I have 100 people flying in from all over the country. No, you're not. So called the woman back, and I convinced her to keep the hospital open and go see tours and manage it until they were able to take it back over. Or back to my story. Sorry, you said keep it conversational. I'm trying to
you're doing good
here. But you know, one of the things that we did that really wasn't done prior to us showing up is we started investigating these other areas of the hospital, which were closed off for years and years and years. And one of the areas that was closed off was the area that this guy lived in. You know, nobody had been down there for a very long time. So we went down to that room and we started looking at, you know, just his stuff, you know, in a creepy way. You know, here's this guy's stuff. They didn't remove any of his belongings. Mm-hmm. It was still a trashed area. There's still food that had obviously been rotting for some time in the kitchen area. And then we came across some occult books on how to summon demons, all this interesting stuff that goes along with that. So we started doing our own research into this, and I happened to bring two guys with me who are into the occult, who are into dark magic, whatever you want to call it. I think it's all BS mostly. I brought them along, and we toured through the hospital, you know, using the assumption that this guy was practicing these Satanism or whatever you want to call it within the hospital. And I said, okay, well, you know, I know that there's certain conditions, like the room has to be a certain way or whatever for you to be able to do these rituals. So if this was you, where would you do these rituals in the hospital? And they both picked the same room, which happened to be the waiting room of the old clinic where people would go for, you know, colds and sore throats and that type of stuff. And we started heavily provoking in that room. And, I'll just say that it really changed the hospital quite a bit. I don't know what we awoken, but for about 2 or 3 years, all of our lives were in the fucking toilet. It was just shit. Bad things happened to us nonstop. People started being attacked violently at the hospital. It's a lot of bad stuff.
Wow.
Now I'm way off topic.
No, I'm just trying to process, you know, what this story and where it goes with that man. So all of this is going on after he's deceased, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So you found these things. What occurred after these dark things started happening to you? Were you immediately attributing it back to what you discovered in the hospital and all of that, or how long did it take to kind of connect those dots?
After we did after my friends did those rituals in that room, I mean, the bad things started happening pretty much right away. I hate to use the word demon. Like, I really hate that word because it's so overplayed nowadays.
Sure.
You know, every ghost hunting show, there's demons all over the place. I mean, there's demons. You know, everybody has a demon with them. There's every haunting is a demon. So with the direction that the paranormal entertainment community, we'll call it that, has taken with everything's a demon, I hate saying that word. But that's what this was. I mean, it was fucking creepy. The first time we ran into it, the room instantly filled up with the smell of rotting flesh and sulfur. We all started hearing just this deep, gravelly voice speaking Latin, and it wasn't an EVP. It wasn't, you know, on a voice recorder. Everybody in the room heard this, including the owner of the hospital who was with us at the time.
Just audibly in the air.
In the air.
Wow.
And pretty much everybody wanted to leave except for me and my friend Chris. And, that's when it started messing with all of us physically. My buddy Chris, he's a big dude. He's about 550 pounds. He literally got forcibly pushed off a chair. Like, I watched him, something hit him almost like if you an invisible linebacker hitting this guy, and he just flies off the chair, all 550 pounds of him. I mean, the manager of the hospital, this same night, I mean, this same session, if you want to call it that, we all watched her get picked up about 3 feet in the air and pushed against the wall. And at the time, you know, there's that part of you, especially me, you know, everybody's looking to me to be the leader. So I don't want to freak out, but I mean, holy fuck. I'm like everybody has their limits, you know? And we hung out just a little bit longer. We ended up walking out of the hospital and just kind of looking at each other in disbelief. Like we're not on any drugs, are we? You know, no, that really happened. And it was a while before we were able to go back to that area of the hospital because it was such a traumatic experience. But once we, I don't know, it's almost like there became like this uneasy truce between us and that entity, where, you know, it didn't bother us that much while we were at the hospital, but it would bother people that we brought over. So we would do that. Even for me right now, it's hard to tell you about it. Not because like I don't want to, it's almost like, how much of this do I want to say? Because I don't know if I'm going to open up a box that I don't want to open up by talking about it again. I'll give you some examples. I mean, there were times that trip. So on the way home from the hospital, going through Atlanta, because I was living in Savannah, Georgia at the time, we were in downtown Atlanta rush hour. I had a tire blowout in my car. We almost wrecked and died. That's going home. We no sooner get home and I start having all these experiences going on in my house. You know, some of it was pretty benign. I mean, at this point in my paranormal investigating career, which sounds stupid saying it, you know, the idea of seeing a shadow person or hearing a voice in my house, it doesn't bother me. Actually, I find it pretty interesting. So even though there was all that type of activity going on, it didn't bother me that much. What really bothered me were the things that it was doing in your head. And this is where I don't know how much I want to talk about. But I'll say that I have two daughters. Mm-hmm. And I was frequently having very vivid nightmares that involved my daughters and really bad things happening to them.
Yeah.
Waking up in the middle of the night, hearing things, breathing in my ear. I'd wake up with scratches on my body. At the time I was single. And I would bring a woman over the house to cook dinner or whatever, and it would run her off. It ended up being a very isolating, depressing time of my life. And it all started with that one session in that stupid room, all because we found that guy's books and we decided to say, oh, well, let's assume that he's practicing in here. Where would he do it? Oh, we think here. Okay, well, I'll let you guys do this ritual. I'll record it.
Yeah.
All because of that. It was crazy.
Yeah, I completely understand where you're coming from, not wanting to go too much into that. I mean, I'm a father too. I have two girls too. And that's obviously something. It's like, you know, this is what we do when we talk about these things. It's part of our life, part of our business. But it's like, I don't want to bring them into that circle of whatever the hell is going on here. So I completely respect that.
There's a part of me even now, you know, You know Gretchen. Mm-hmm. You're the one. She's the one who orchestrated this whole thing for us.
Yeah.
She's the general manager of Ghost City Tours, but she's also my girlfriend. We live together. We've been together almost 4 years. Mm-hmm. Even now, there's things that happen to her that I feel guilty about. You know, I feel like I've brought these things into my life, and wherever I go, they follow me. She's been scratched. She's been pushed. She's had these vivid, horrible nightmares of demonic entities and bad things happening. And, you know, there's a party that feels really guilty for that. Like, did I do this? Yeah. Did me wanting to be some macho, egotistical guy that walked into this hospital? I'm big and bad. I'm not afraid of anything. Did I really just fuck up somebody's life? It's not a good feeling. And I wish more of these paranormal investigators today would realize this type of stuff before they go out trying to emulate what they see on TV. It's fucking stupid.
Yeah, I agree. And I hear it all the time too. I completely understand and agree. Have you ever, feeling like there's, you know, would you say it's almost like an attachment that's with you?
Yeah, it's an attachment. And I think it absolutely is.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's just one. I mean, there's, There are two or three entities that even now in my house, I know they say don't investigate in your own house. I do it all the time, which probably isn't helping things. But there are two or three that I know. I know them by their name, and I also know them by their voice. I get them very regularly in my house, and I first met them at South Pittsburgh Hospital. Mm-hmm. There's two guys and a woman. One of the guys, I use that name loosely, or that description loosely, because I actually think it's this demonic entity, mm-hmm. or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I know that thing's voice very well. He always introduces himself the same way. The first, if you're listening in a room, sometimes you'll hear it audibly. Sometimes you hear it through the voice recorder if you have headphones on. But every time it's this creepy, like, hey. Mm-hmm. You'll just be laying in bed and hear it, and you'll be like, oh, that fucker's back.
Sure.
What's going to happen tonight? And that was one of the entities that I first encountered at the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital. And what's really funny about that is that that entity has followed me all over the country. When we were holding these ghost hunts at multiple locations, we would go to, everywhere from Bobby Mackey's to Hillview Manor, Mansfield Reformatory, St. Augustine Lighthouse, and everywhere in between. And I would get this same fucker at all these places. I'm sitting in the well room at Bobby Mackey's, and all of a sudden, here he is. And it's like, really, dude? You followed me here? Okay.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Has it been something that you've wanted to get rid of or attempted to rid yourself of?
No, I have not. I don't know that I want to get rid of it either.
Okay.
Unless it really started doing some major damage, to somebody I cared about, I'm not too concerned. It does keep things interesting. I'll put it that way.
Sure.
And, to be honest, this whole idea of, cleansing, smudging, exorcisms, all this type of stuff, I don't buy into that at all. I know it supposedly works for some people. Some people went through a cleansing ceremony or whatever it may be, and whatever was bothering them may have left and is not bothering them anymore, but I think it's just in their head. I don't know that any of that works.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not one of those people that buy into that.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing, and some will claim it works, some won't. There doesn't seem to be much of a rhyme or reason as to why or when it is actually working. I mean, some would say if the entity is that powerful, and it's able to do what it's able to do, why would it suddenly just change its mind when you try to will it away? What is the power that changes there? And there'll be arguments for that too, but it's just one of those things that you have to take a look at and go, well, it seems to be pretty powerful. I don't know that I have the power to technically get rid of it, considering the way it's come in without its permission to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a certain element to this side of the ghost hunting community that I think really exposes human arrogance, and just the ego-driven aspect of this, that if we are really dealing with unknown entities, especially if you're talking about, demonic entities or whatever you might refer to them as personally, the idea that you have the power, you don't even know what it is. You don't know where it came from. You don't know how it works. Oh, but you have the power to get rid of it. Give me a break. it doesn't make sense to me.
Sure.
That human beings that... by the way, a lot of people don't even think this thing exists. But yeah, you definitely have the power to get rid of it. Say a chant, put some salt in a circle, whatever.
Sure. No, I mean, that's what I like about our conversations here on the show is the fact that everybody has a different perspective. I'm not here to say you're right, you're wrong. It's just, it's basically everybody express their opinion and then let each individual decide what they want to believe. I have more questions than answers.
I'm not saying that I'm right.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm not saying that I'm right, because I'm very convinced that when I die, I'm going to realize that everything I thought was completely wrong. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to happen to you and everybody else. I think when we die, something happens, but and me not being a religious person, I'm not going to claim that I know what that is, but all my ideas about how ghosts work and what they might be, I'm pretty sure they're all completely wrong.
Sure.
But they make me feel good right now.
And that's what matters.
Absolutely.
Let's go back to talking more about the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital. So obviously you had that experience there, and it affected you greatly.
Not just me.
Yeah, and others too. Before we move on to talking more about the hospital, are there any the other folks that were affected by it? Are there any of their stories you care to share of how it affected them?
You know, the only person in particular, I'll use her first name, and I don't think she'll care because she's still a good friend of mine. Her name's Stacy. I do know that she dealt with I don't even want to say depression or anything like that. I don't want to speak for her too much. Mm-hmm. But I do know that being at that hospital all the time, being around all these entities affected her in a negative way. And she's not with the hospital anymore. I'm still friends with her on Facebook. And once again, not speaking for her at all. But it seems like since she's been away from the hospital, she's a much happier person now.
Sure.
You know, not dealing with all that shit every day.
And that's understandable.
Go ahead.
I said that's understandable.
Yeah, and there is another buddy of mine. His name's Chris, and his name's Chris Allen, and he actually owns a tour company in Savannah as well. And he's a really good friend of mine, and I know that he was impacted too. I mean, there were times where he was the gentleman that I referred to earlier, a big guy getting knocked off the chair. Mm-hmm. I know that he dealt with stuff too, but he kept it very close to his vest. He was a quiet guy. You know, he dealt with it on his own. But I do know for years, he felt the impact of being there. Sure. Because it wasn't when we were there. It wasn't like we just went for a couple nights a year or something. I mean, there were times where we stayed in that hospital for weeks on end and hardly left. I mean, all in. I mean, we over the course of 3 years, we probably spent 4 or 5 months there.
Oh.
So this wasn't just some part-time place that we would go to every so often. It was almost like an addiction.
Yeah.
You know, it kept drawing you back in, and like I said, there were weird things that happen when you try to leave. You know, you go outside and like two of our cars aren't starting. Like, really? One is still weird. Both of them. Now we can't leave and we have to wait till the next morning. So now we got to go back in the hospital and spend another night. That's a little weird. It was almost like it didn't want you to leave. And then when you were gone, it was all you could think about was going back again. I mean, I can't tell you how many times we would drive 5 hours back to Savannah and be home 2 or 3 days and we'd be calling Stacy. Hey, Stacy, are there any groups the next week? There isn't. Can we come stay for a week in the hospital? Sure. Come up, guys. I mean, it really became an obsession. Even here talking about it, I can't tell you how much I would love to go there right now. It definitely draws you back.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Tim Nealon about the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital. In part two, we'll continue our discussion. We'll learn about what went on after a demon attached itself to Tim one night. What was it like when he returned to the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital? Tim spent many nights on various beds that patients died on at the hospital. What were some of his ghostly encounters that he experienced? Is there a specific area in the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital that's more active than others? Who's the spirit of Nellie that haunts the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital? And a disturbing experience where an investigator's mouth felt as if it was being filled with blood. What happened there? And what is the state of the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital today? All of those questions and more will be answered in part two of our interview. To hear it, become a gravekeeper through Patreon. Simply go to patreon.com/thegravetalks for $5. You'll have access to part two of this interview and part two of all of our episodes. It's only $5. You get to get all of those extras and support this program and keep it on the air. Go to patreon.com/thegravetalks or go to our website, thegravetalks.com, and click Become a Gravekeeper. Your support is what allows this program to continue and stay on the air. We thank you for that. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening to another episode of The Grave Talks.